chapter 7, and also the book of Joel. 2 Chronicles chapter 7, and then we'll be going over to the book of Joel. In 2 Chronicles, we'll read verses 12 through verse 14. Verse 14 is a very familiar verse. But begin reading in verse 12. And the Lord appeared to Solomon by night and said unto him, I have heard thy prayer and have chosen this place to myself for an house of sacrifice. If I shut up heaven that there be no rain, or if I command the locusts to devour the land, or if I send pestilence among my people, if my people, which are called by my name, shall humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and will forgive their sin and will heal their land. Then over in the book of Joel, chapter 1, we'll read verses 1 and 2. We'll later on look at several verses in Joel, but for now we'll just read verses 1 and 2. The word of the Lord that came to Joel, the son of Pethuel. Hear this, ye old men, give ear, all ye inhabitants of the land. Hath this been in your days, or even in the days of your fathers? What we read in 2 Chronicles is God's answer to Solomon, who had been praying. And what we read in Joel is simply a stated fact that God gave a message to Joel in a terrible, unprecedented time. But back in 2 Chronicles 7, in God's answer to Solomon, he mentions, verse 13, three different scenarios. No rain, the locust, and pestilence. And then he follows that with what we read there in verse 14, which is really very plain instruction in what God's people were to do if one of those scenarios arose. The implication is that when these difficult circumstances arise, God's people were to consider their own spiritual condition. God's people were to concern themselves with their own spiritual condition, and they were to take responsibility for such and to respond in a spiritual manner. And we see the same thing in the book of Joel, where God's people were face to face with a terrible and unprecedented situation. And we see, as you read through the book of Joel, you'll see that Joel's instruction to them was spiritual in nature. So we have two texts separate. They're not connected contextually, but they have this in common, this truth. Terrible temporal scenarios met with a spiritual response. And what is presented here, if we take it to our hearts, will transform the way that we perceive the happenings of life, whatever they might be, and it would also prevent many of the troubles that God's people bring into their lives and would transform our lives. So I want to speak this evening on spiritual response to the temporal scenarios of life. It is truly sad when God's people lose sight of the real issue in the midst of the issues of life. And it's a very common problem. We've all done it. It is truly sad when God's people confuse the temporal matters of life with what should be the real matter. And again, that is a very common problem. When God's people lose sight of the real root problem in the midst of life's problems. And again, this is commonplace. What we must remember is the circumstances and the various scenarios of life are not our main concern. They're not what is most important, but rather our spiritual condition. And that is what is brought out in these two texts. So we'll look at them individually. We're going to spend more time on the one in Joel than 2 Chronicles. But considering the background of 2 Chronicles, in chapter 5, the building of the temple has been finished. It is now being furnished with the sacred furnishings, and as a result, the people are praising God, they're thanking God, there's music. We see in verses 13 and 14 of chapter 5, God's glory comes down. It was just a wonderful time. And then you move on to chapter 6, and you see Solomon acknowledges the faithfulness of God, and then speaking to the people, he declares the greatness of God. And then in verse 12 of chapter 6, he's seen standing before the altar, and he prays, and he does so in the hearing of the people. In verses 14 and 15 of chapter 6, he acknowledges the glory of God. And though Israel was at present enjoying a time of just wonderful peace and abundant prosperity, Solomon knew the nature of this people. He knew the history of this people, and he knew how quickly they could ruin it all. They have a wonderful situation here, but Solomon is very much aware that these people can ruin it all very quickly. So Solomon prays regarding this in verses 22 through 39. And in his prayer, he presents a variety of scenarios that he felt was inevitable because of their sinful nature, because of their inclinations and their tendencies. So he petitions God, and he brings up these different scenarios and dilemmas that he was sure would come upon God's people. And notice some of these in 2 Chronicles chapter 6 and verse 22. If a man sin against his neighbor. Well, he knew that was going to happen. Verse 24, and if, notice there's an if in all of these, if thy people Israel be put to the worse before the enemy. So he knew that there would be defeat in battle because they have sinned against thee. He knew that there would be consequences of their sins. Verse 26, he says, when the heaven is shut up, and there is no rain. That was a scenario. No rain. And this again was because they have sinned against thee. And then in verse 28, there's several things. If there be dearth in the land, if there be pestilence, if there be blasting, extreme heat, or mildew, locust, or caterpillars, if their enemies besiege them in the cities of their land, whatsoever sore or whatsoever sickness there be. So again, a lot of different scenarios there. And then in verse 34, if thy people go out to war against the enemies. So he knew there would be times of war. Verse 36, if they sin against thee. Again, he knew that was going to happen. Verse 37, he mentions being carried captive. So all these, he presents all these scenarios to the Lord, and he's praying in that when these situations arrive, that God would be gracious, and that God would forgive, and God would restore his people. And then in chapter 7, God responds to his prayer in verses 1 and 2 by accepting the burnt offering and the sacrifice, and God again reveals his glory. That is followed by the response of the people there in verses 3 through 9, and you can read that. And then in verse 10, the people go away to their tents, or they go home. And then in verse 12, God appears to Solomon in the evening and gives him answer to what he had prayed for. And in doing so, God mentioned three more scenarios. He says here in verse 13, if I. We don't know what God's going to do. But he says, if I. And he mentions three things. If I shut up heaven, that there be no rain. God can do that. God might do that. And then he goes on, he says, or if I command the locust to devour the land. Or if I send pestilence amongst my people. Three very difficult and trying situations that God mentions. And then he follows that with, if my people. Seems a little odd. He mentions these things and then he just says, if my people. So he's drawing attention to the fact that it is not verse 13 that is the main issue. It is not verse 13 that is the main matter. It's my people. He moves from the three terrible and devastating scenarios of verse 13 to, if my people. If my people. I believe what he's saying is that the real issue, the real matter of importance and concern, is not no rain, is not the locust, is not the pestilence. Those are very difficult situations. Those are things we would be concerned about, of course. But they're not the real issue. The real issue, that which is most important, that which is your greatest concern, he is saying, is your spiritual condition. And you see that as you read on in verse 14. So again, in his prayer, he had mentioned many difficult scenarios, many different dilemmas that God's people would likely find themselves in. He mentioned that they would sin against one another, that there would be times where they would face defeat. There would be times where there would be no rain. There would be times of dearth and pestilence and blasting and mildew and locusts and caterpillars and enemies. There would be times of war. There would be times of captivity. And what God is saying is, my people need not concern themselves so much with the turmoil and the difficult scenarios, but my people need to be focused upon making sure that their hearts and their lives are in line with me. So in every scenario, we as the people of God must be focused, must be concerned, must not be focused, must not be concerned about the wrong matter. And it's very common. It's very common for you and I to get focused on the wrong thing. What God went on to say in verse 14 is to be recognized as our responsibility, as our priority, regardless of the circumstances, as our focus, as our response to whatever the happenings of life might be. And he mentions some different things. He says, humble yourselves. Whatever is happening, humble yourselves. And why? So that you can put yourself in a position to do the next thing. Pray. Humble yourselves. Pray. Seek my face. turn from their wicked ways. And then that is followed by the promise, I will hear. And I will forgive their sin, which is the real problem. That is the real problem. I will forgive their sin. Sin is always the real problem. You know, we've heard a lot this past week about racism in America, and racism is a problem. That is true. We're not denying that. But the real problem is a humanity issue. The real problem is simply man is depraved. And people talk about, well, we need to get to the point where there is no more racism or whatever. Well, you're not going to get to that point, because the problem is a humanity problem. The problem is a total depravity problem. The problem is a sin problem. And that's what God is telling them here. I'll forgive your sin. In other words, God is going to get to the root of the matter. And then he says, I will heal their land. So we see here in 2 Chronicles that you have these different scenarios. And God's people are to concern themselves with, what is my spiritual condition? What is my relation to God? And then we're told what to do. Humble, pray, seek God's face, turn. That brings us to the text in Joel, if you go back there. In the book of Joel, there is a severe plague that was happening right then, and on unprecedented scale, and it was also prophecy of the future when armies would invade and take over. So the people at the very moment were experiencing something very traumatic. They were experiencing the ruinous judgment of God, and even a more severe judgment was coming when actual troops, armies would come in. We read of this judgment beginning with verse 4. Where we're told that they were under the attack of insects. And there are four species mentioned. The palmer worm, the locust, the canker worm, the caterpillar. Referring to various stages of a rapid succession of devastation. And I believe as you read verse 4, you see that there were successive swarms of these locusts that came upon Judah, destroying what the previous battalion of locusts had left behind. So what you have here is not just destruction, you have successions of destruction. And no matter what attempts were made to stop the locusts, and I'm sure there were various attempts made, but whatever attempts were made to stop the locust, rank upon rank would push forward, leaving a path of destruction. And then as you read through the chapter, you see the results of this devastation. You see in verse 5, the grapes have been devoured. In verse 7, the vineyards have been destroyed. The fig tree has been stripped of its bark. The leaves are left white. Verse 9, as a result of this, the offerings of the house of God had ceased. God's house was affected. Verse 10, the field and the land is wasted. That is, the grass and the herbs and the fruit and the leaves. Everything's in a state of deterioration. In verse 11, the wheat, the barley, the harvest, they're all destroyed. In verse 12, the vines and the trees are withered, stripped of their leaves, stripped of their fruits. And the sap and the moisture is gone. The trees are dead. Joy and rejoicing that the husbandman once had is vanished. In verse 13, the meat offering and the drink offering is withholden from the house of your God. Again, all of these things affected the worship of God, affected the house of God. So once again, this plague has a devastating effect. In verse 16, the food was cut off in a very visible way. And there was no joy in the house of God. Again, it had a devastating effect upon worship. In verse 17, the seeds for the next harvest were lost. The storehouses became empty. The barns were in disrepair. And that which did spring up withered away. In verse 18, the herds are suffering. They're confused. The reason they're confused is because where there was once pasture, it's no longer there. So they're confused. The flocks and the sheep are abandoned. Looking around upon the scene, you see that which once was very beautiful and plenteous is now a place of desolation and destruction. And in describing all of this, in chapter 1, verse 5, verse 9, verse 16, there are the words cut off, meaning severed and discontinued. In verse 7, there's the word waste, referring to the vine, speaking of deterioration. There's the word bare, referring to the fig tree. It had become barren and desolate. There is the phrase cast away, cast it away, meaning useless. In verse 10, there's the word wasted in reference to the field and the corn. It all shriveled up. Also, there's the word mourneth, referring to the land, meaning that it was just the land was in a very dismal condition. And then you read the word dry, the words dried up, which is in reference to the new wine, meaning it dehydrated, became non-existent. The word languisheth in reference to the oil, meaning it was wasting away. And we must not think of their oil as we would today. In verse 11, there's the word perished in relation to the harvest of the field, meaning that things just died in the field. In verse 12, there's the words dried up, languisheth, and withereth away. In verse 17, there's the word rotten, referring to the seeds, meaning they had become decayed and were disintegrating. And the word desolate, in relation to the storehouses, meaning the storehouses became empty and barren. There's the word broken down in relation to the barns. They were in disrepair. There's the word withered in relation to the corn. As you read all of those phrases, you see that everywhere there was ruin. Everywhere there was decay. Everywhere there was wreckage and destitution and disrepair, sorrow and death. And again, from the question of Joel in verse 2, this was an unprecedented scale to anything the old men had ever seen before. So the nation was in the grip of destruction. Things were bad. Things were really bad. And no doubt this was a very dangerous and pressing and urgent time. So there's God's people. They're in the midst of devastation. They're in the midst of waste, ruin, destitution, chaos, shock. I'm sure people were going around saying, I just can't believe this. I've never seen anything like this. I can't believe this. I would have never thought I would see something like this. No doubt a lot of sorrow, heartache, anxiety, and distress. And we read in this situation, the word of the Lord came to Joel. It was during this time that the word of the Lord came to Joel. And the message that Joel was given to preach really didn't focus upon the dreadful situation that they were in as far as the earth, as far as the fields and all of that. But it focused upon a spiritual response. No doubt the people could see the devastation. No doubt they could feel the results of the locust plague, the judgment of God. But what they needed to be reminded of, and Joel would be the one that would remind them, what they needed to be exhorted to was the real need. The real need. So Joel, in chapter 1, verse 2, first thing he does, he calls upon the people to hear. Hear. And he calls upon them to give ear. What he's saying is, I have the message of God for this particular hour, for these particular circumstances. And you need to give close, undivided attention. What he's saying is, God has something to say. He always does. God has something to say about your current situation. And you need to listen, is what Joel is saying. Hear, give ear. God has something to say about your current situation. And you need to listen. And you need to receive the message. This is what Joel is telling them. And that's true of you and I as well. God has a message for every circumstance in our life. And we need to listen. We need to receive what God says. And whatever the situation, whatever the scenario, hear God. Concern yourself with what God has to say. I wonder what God has to say. Well, He's already said it, and He's saying it. Just listen. So to impress this upon them, He shouts in verse 5, awake! Awake! If they're going to hear, if they're going to give attention, they have to be awake. He's calling them to their, He's addressing their condition. They're asleep. And He's saying, you need to be alert. You cannot remain in this state of unawareness. You must be aware, you must be conscious of the message of God. Notice to whom Joel speaks. He says, awake ye drunkards. Now he's talking to God's people. And I believe it just epitomizes many who profess to be the people of God. They're saturated, just like a drunkard. They're intoxicated with the reasonings and the ways and the things of the world. It's evident by their walk, their speech, their vision, their minds, their judgment, their understanding. So here's a people who are under the power and the influence and the sway of an outside power. So the call goes out to these drunkards, awake. You that have, in this for you and I today, those who are under the influence and the sway of the carnal, wake up. Become alert. And then he mentions ye drinkers of wine, epitomizing just the carefree lifestyle of the people who were just living for pleasure. He says, awake. It's a summons of emergency. Awake. Wake up. Somebody comes storming into your room tonight saying, wake up, wake up, wake up. Something's wrong. There's an emergency. And the emergency is not the temporal situation here. The emergency is a spiritual situation. And if you take care of that spiritual situation, much of the temporal will be solved as well. In verse 8, he calls upon them to lament. He says, hear, wake, lament. That is, cry and moan and weep. And he tells them the degree of this, like a virgin girded with sackcloth for the husband of her youth. He says, weep, as you would weep over the death of a precious loved one. Weep. It's a weeping of their spiritual condition, which brought about all these problems. Verse 11, he calls upon them to be ye ashamed. Sorry. Contrite. Verse 13, he says, gird yourselves. That is, prepare to do something and to lament and to howl, which is to wail and scream. And he says, lie all night in sackcloth. Verse 14, a call goes forth, sanctify ye a fast. Call a solemn assembly. Then in verse 1 of chapter 2, he says, blow ye the trumpet in Zion. Sound an alarm in my holy mountain. Again, there's a call to attention. Whatever the scenario is in our life, we need to be giving attention to God. We need to give attention to our spiritual condition. Now, the idea of calling this fast and this solemn assembly is that everything was to be set aside for the purpose of meeting with God. And oh, how we need to do that. Set aside a time for one purpose, to meet with God. Individually. Here it was collectively. You can do it either way. But there needs to be this setting everything aside to meet with God. You find yourself in a difficult situation. We find ourselves as a country in a difficult situation. One of our first responses should be, I've got to go talk to God. I got to hear what God has to say. I got to meet with the Lord. To call this fast and solemn assembly speaks of the seriousness and the urgency of the situation. What he's saying is due to your circumstances, rearrange your schedule. Put everything else on hold and assemble for the purpose of getting right with God. For the purpose of repentance and confession and the forsaking of sin and the renewal of faith and obedience toward God. The other night when I was watching the news, Sharon says I shouldn't do that. She's probably right. But anyway, the commentator, I believe it was Laura Ingram, said this is a spiritual problem. And I said, yes, it is. Now, she never identified the spiritual problem, but she was right. This is a spiritual problem, and it's not going to be fixed any other way. And that's the message Joel is delivering here. This is a spiritual problem. Yes, the land is devoured. But this is a spiritual problem. This is a problem that has its roots in spiritual things, spiritual matters. So Joel is saying, do not call this fast, call this solemn assembly. Do not let anything get in the way or take precedence over this. You need to meet with God for the purpose of getting right with God, is what he's telling them. Don't let anything take precedence over this solemn assembly. And that needs to be our concern, is we need to meet with God for the purpose of being where we ought to be with the Lord. And that's to take precedence over everything else. Whatever else is going on, this is to take precedence. Notice the time constraint of this instruction in chapter 2, verse 12. Therefore also now. This isn't something that is to be put off. This is now. There is a sense of urgency. And then he goes on what they were to do now. They were to turn. They were to turn to the Lord with all their heart. Do it now. Not tomorrow. Not an hour from now. He says, do it now. Turn ye even to me. Move in the direction of God. And do this with all your heart. It's to be done with sincerity. And to do it with fasting and weeping and with mourning. And rend your heart and not your garments. By rending their garments, they were just going through. That was the way they expressed their sorrow back then. And what God is telling, what Joel is telling them here is, you're just going through the motions, but you're not really repenting. He says, rend your heart and not your garments. Quit going through the outward emotions of being sorry. Move beyond the mere external display of sorrow regarding their sin. God is saying through Joel, sin is your problem. Yes, the fields are devoured. The vines are gone. The trees, there's problems out there. That's all true. But sin is your real problem. And God is saying through Job, I'm not interested in the usual traditional way of expressing sorrow. You need to move beyond that. And you need to rend your heart concerning the fact that you've sinned against me, is what God is telling them through Joel. It is a call to be burdened. It is a call to be broken and sorrowful and ashamed because of sin. So much so that you hate it and you turn from it and you forsake it. And that's really the real matter at hand. And that is to take precedence over all other matters. Here's what we do so often. There's a problem. Whatever problem you want to consider. And we get to think, I've got to fix this problem. And we get busy fixing that problem, completely ignoring the spiritual condition that might have caused the problem. Our first concern ought to be, I've got to be in a right relationship with God. And you get there, a lot of the problems will go away. Or you'll have the wisdom on how to deal with it. But this is the real matter at hand, our spiritual condition before God. And that's to take precedence over all other matters. So in the midst of all the issues of life, and there's many of them, God's people must not lose sight of the real issue, which is our spiritual condition. The real issue is, I've got to be right with God. That's the real issue. I've got to be right with God. I've sat with many married couples. That's where I always start. I'm talking about two saved people. You both got to get right with God. There's no sense trying to deal with your problems if you don't first get right with God. Get right with God. And you know what? That ends most counseling sessions. There's no need to proceed. Got to get right. You got to get right. People will say, well, it's her or it's him. No, you need to get right. You need to get right. The other party needs to get right. And now we have a foundation upon which we can build. And this is the real issue. Whatever happens in our life, whatever goes on in our country, I need to ask myself, am I right with God? Am I where I ought to be with God? That's the issue. So in the midst of all the temporal matters of life, we can't afford to lose sight of the main matter. I need to be right with God. People get offended. I've seen it many times. They get livid when you just ask the simple question. I mean, if I'm doing any counseling at all, it's one of the first questions I'm going to ask. Well, what's your relation with the Lord? Well, that don't have anything to do with it. Oh, it has everything to do with it. And just the response of anger tells me right away, they're not right. If you're right with God, you're not going to mind someone asking you, are you right with God? You say, yes, I am. I'm as close to Him as I've ever been. I'm not as close as I should be, but I'm closer than I've been. You won't get angry at that. So in the midst of all our problems, we must realize the root problem is a spiritual matter. What's going on in our country is a spiritual matter. It's a sin problem. It's a sin problem. In all the temporal, we must make sure that we are to be what we're to be. God says, if I shut up the heavens and there be no rain, that does not change what you're to do. Humble yourselves, pray, seek my face, turn. If I send pestilence, humble yourselves, pray, seek my face. Joel says, awake, hear, awake, lament, and so on. This is the need of the hour. So both of our texts serve as a warning and a reminder. Don't focus on the wrong issue. Don't lose sight of the central issue, which is our spiritual condition or relation to the Lord. And if we focus on the real issue, that'll improve our lives. And that will enable us to endure and to overcome whatever it is that we need to overcome. And it'll prevent us from getting stuck where we don't need to get stuck. So whatever the circumstance, our central responsibility, our number one priority, our focus, and our response is to be toward God. And we cannot allow circumstances to divert us from our main responsibility, which is our relationship to the Lord. What I'm telling you tonight is we must all, whatever the circumstances are, we have to pay attention. Where am I with God? Where am I with God? What is my relation with God? Whatever problems are in your life, that needs to be your concern. What is my relation to God? Whatever God is calling you to do, same thing. What is my relation to God? If you're trying to determine God's will, same thing. What is my relation to God? That needs to be the number one concern. God help us to understand that truth. That whatever happens, we must have a spiritual response. And God help us to do that. Let's look to the Lord. Heavenly Father.